Welcome to the Meal Mentor Podcast. I'm your host, Lindsay S. Nixon. This is the 22nd episode in the co-pilot series. We're almost halfway through the year. Very exciting. And this is just our place where we can chat about making the plant-based lifestyle more doable, especially while facing all the different kinds of challenges and roadblocks we all experience when we're making positive changes and we're kind of getting healthy and we're changing our diet and losing weight and all that fun stuff. Today's guest, I'm really excited to have her on. I asked her to be a guest, and I was so thrilled when she said yes. She's one of our annual members, and she's very active in the forums and in the Facebook group. So if you're a member of either, I'm sure you're going to recognize her right away because she's just such an inspiring inspiration, and I'm so proud of all the progress she's made. That's one thing I love working with the members is I see in real time, week to week, the huge progress you're making, and I notice sometimes you guys don't recognize it the way I do. I guess it's true that other people see the positives before you do in yourself, but we're going to talk a little bit about that today too. But before I ramble on anymore, please join me in welcoming Jennifer. Hey, Jennifer.
Hi, Lindsay.
Thank you again so much for agreeing to be on today.
Oh, no problem. I'm so excited.
Good. Maybe you can give everyone a quick backstory about you in case they don't know you from the forums or the Facebook group.
Sure. I'll try to be quick. I kind of ramble, but so I went vegetarian back in early 2005. I heard someone speaking, reading from the Bible, and I just read a passage, and I was so moved by it and decided I didn't want to participate in the death of animals and wanted to eat peacefully and be at peace with God's creation. And while this man was speaking, I turned to my husband and said, I think I should go vegetarian. And you don't have to, but I feel like I should. And he said, okay, sure. So he's been very supportive, which is good. He's super laid back about food, which is very, very helpful for me. So I went vegetarian, and I came back from this conference and even told my family, and they're like, will you still eat eggs and milk? I was like, and at that point I was like, yeah, as long as it's not something dying, you know, I don't want to participate in the death of something. But then I started reading about how the meat and dairy industry and the egg industry, just how all of that works. And it just broke my heart. And then I started reading health books and I was like, oh my goodness. I remember reading Mad Cowboy by Howard Lyman. And that just, I was like, oh my goodness. So I slowly over the next few months after that went vegan. And probably about a year after that, my husband on his own went vegetarian as well and started, he ate whatever I made him at home. And when we ate out in restaurants, he would sometimes eat some chicken or whatever. But eventually on his own, he just went vegetarian.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So I've been vegan for, I guess, since sometime around 2005. I don't remember exactly when that happened. But then it's been kind of some up and downs with my two kids and pregnancies. I went back to eating some dairy and eggs and then also vegan junk food. So then I became a vegan. Vegan junk food. Maybe that should be a new name for like Jigen.
Jigen, I love it. That is so funny when you said that. I was like, Jigen, that's great.
And then my weight just crept up and I was like, I cannot do this anymore. And then I found Happy Herbivore and a couple years ago and it was so great. And I've been using the cookbooks and the meal plans now and the weight has been coming off and it's slowing down, but it's good. So
yeah,
I've been,
and we'll talk about why that happens too. And I love that you are so honest about that, you know, you've had some, not setbacks, but kind of you've gone backwards and then forwards again. So even if you do fall off or you start making less than good choices for whatever those reasons are, you can, you know, dust yourself off and get back to where you were, which is what you've been doing. And that's one of the things why I feel you're so inspiring because you're so honest about it, but you're also, you're not letting it hold you down. You're not going, ah, screw it. You're like, all right. Today's a new day, and I love that about you.
Yeah, absolutely. I do try to keep that focus. And I even remember years ago when I was struggling with my weight, I remember in my mind thinking, I will get this. I will get this one day. I might not have it now, but I know that one day I'm going to get this under control. And so there was this kind of mindset in the back of my mind that I might not have it now, but I will.
I love that. I really do. And one thing, one reason I was so excited when we were first talking before you came on the podcast was to talk about religion, because that's not something we've ever talked about on the podcast before. And I know a lot of members are religious or they have many different faiths. And actually a few years ago, actually back in December of 2012, I wrote a blog post on Happy Herbivore called Exploring the Relationship Between Veganism and Religion. And a lot of different people from all different faiths wrote into me and basically explained how they found, like you, that their plant-based diet overlapped or was involved with or deepened their spirituality. And so I was so touched and amazed that it was, you know, a religious experience. You know, it was being in church and hearing a sermon that spawned you down the whole path altogether. You know, a lot of people there, it's health reasons or animal rights, and certainly you have that compassion towards animals, but it was your faith that brought you here.
It was, and I feel like that's kind of the grounding for me, is that it was this desire to live in a way that God had originally intended us to live. I went back to Genesis, and it was like, you know, he gave plants for people to eat, and I was like, oh, no wonder they're so good for us if that's intended. And just to see that to live peacefully with God and with his creation, it just brings everything in my faith and in my life kind of full circle. And it's interesting because I feel like a lot of people who are Christian might not. In fact, I get weird looks oftentimes that, you know, here I am. I'm actually a children and youth pastor at a church, and people are kind of like, oh, she's the weird vegan pastor. I don't know. But I've been hoping to use that place to kind of say, no, look, this really is how God meant for it to be. And I'm trying not to push it or anything like that, but just, you know, open up conversations when people are asking me, like, well, why don't you eat that? And why don't you eat me? God says it's okay. And I said, well, I know it is. It said it's okay, but it's not what is best. And I think that, that I just want to live as best as I can. And it's not, I don't live perfectly, no one does, but I want to live the best I can. And so.
And biblically speaking, we were vegetarians until after the flood.
Yes, yeah. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And there is Seventh-day Adventists, mm-hmm. who are, I think some of the members now do eat meat, but for a really long time, I mean, that was a huge part of their practice and their faith and their beliefs, that they're vegetarian. And so there's a lot of information on, like, their websites, even if you're not a Seventh-day Adventist, but you're just Christian, it can really lead you to sort of finding references and things like that if you're interested in learning more. But have there been any specific, you know, passages or anything that really spoke to you, that really confirmed to you that this was what was right?
Yeah, the passage that that the pastor was speaking on was from Isaiah chapter 11, and it's this visual picture of the future of when God makes all things right again, because everything's, you know, obviously the world is messed up and things are broken, but God will heal and make all things right again one day, and when Christ returns. And there's this picture in Isaiah of the lion and the lamb will lay down together. And I remember when he read that, and I remember thinking, you know, when I watch the National Geographics and you see the lions and the savanna and they're chasing down either the gazelles or the zebras, and I just go, I don't know who to root for, because, like, if the lion doesn't eat the gazelle or the zebra, then he starves, but then poor gazelle or zebra, I don't want them to die. And here's this picture of the lion is not eating its prey. They're laying down together in peace and harmony. And it says that no one will hurt or harm on all of my holy mountain, and that there will be no more death. There will be no more death with animals, with people. And it was like, I don't want to wait for this to happen. I want to participate in it here and now. Mm-hmm. And anything I can do to live that out, and to live peacefully with God, with his creation, with myself as part of his creation. And I think that was a part that didn't click to me for a little while in terms of health. But it really is like, I haven't read Jean Bauer's book, but just when I saw your blog with his book about the very first tenet, that it was to live I don't remember exactly how he said it, but to live in alignment with your values.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, this is exactly what my values are. And it's just made my life kind of come full circle in that sense.
I was really excited to have Gene on the Meal Mentor podcast too. And he actually does talk about all those tenets in his podcast, if anyone wants to listen.
Yeah, I listened to that one too.
Yeah, and it's really amazing. And it's curious. And it wasn't until you were talking about Gene that it occurred to me that I know Gene was raised Catholic. And so I wonder if some of maybe his upbringing and beliefs maybe are part of that tenet too. Just something that came to me as you were saying that. And I was like, oh, that could be.
One thing,
and maybe you will have more experience than me in this, is a lot of times I will hear people who are fundamentalist Christian and they'll want to be plant-based, or maybe their family or even them, they're not sure. They're kind of coming at me with the eat meat is the way God intended argument, God gave us dominion over the animals argument. And I never really know how to, you know, help them or explain to them or give them something that they could say to people who are, you know, charging at them with that argument. There is a book called Dominion by Matthew Scully that sort of addresses this, but I wanted to get your kind of your reaction and your take and what you might suggest for people that feel that way.
That is a good question. And actually, the book that you just mentioned, I have it sitting next to my bed, but I haven't read it yet. And there's a couple of other books. And I don't know, it's something I really struggle with. And I, because there's a part of me that can get very riled up about things. And yet my whole desire is to live peacefully. And so it's like, okay, how do I respond to people and remain centered and peaceful and just give this as an option and say, this is what I think, and you know, people can receive it or reject it, and that's up to them. But I think, especially when I talk about the passage from Isaiah, that yes, God does say, he says it's okay to eat meat, but just because things are okay doesn't mean we necessarily have to or should do them. I loved it in the movie Cinderella, when the new one that came out, when she saw them, the prince hunting the stag, and it's like, well, why are you doing this? And he's like, because we've always done it, and she's like, oh, how did he put it? He's like, because we should, because we do. And she's like, just because you've always done it doesn't mean you should. And just because something is permitted doesn't mean it's a good thing, or you should do it. It's just, like, okay, you can. But obviously there are so many negative things that can come out of it, that why would you choose to, even if you are permitted or allowed to? So I don't always have great answers for that too, and I really do struggle. But I think just trying to remain calm and saying, you know, God does permit it, but it's not there are a lot of things that God permits. I mean, God permits divorce, and I'm not here to say no one should get divorced, because there are definitely times when that happens, and that's for the best. But it doesn't mean it's the way God intended things to be. And I think going back to Genesis for me is the biggest thing, because if we go back to look at, like, what did God intend for us when he created us to have a relationship with him and the animals, and the whole dominion thing is just like, it's tough for me, because it's like, that doesn't mean we mistreat them. It means we take care of them, that we were, that just the way God takes care of us is how we should take care of his creation. And that doesn't mean to be mean or abusive or anything like that, but to tend and care for these creatures. And if you think about, like, all the videos you see, like, or that I see at least, like on YouTube or Facebook, of animals and just the cute animals, and how we have such a connection with them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think God intended us to have that connection with these animals. And there's a reason why we go, oh, look at how sweet that is. Or, like, you know, we have this visceral feeling with these animals. And because that's how God, he created us to have that relationship.
Absolutely. And I love that you reference Genesis, because that's something that I always kind of come back to myself. And it was almost the exact thing you were saying, that God gives man dominion over the animals and tells them to rule the animals, but he doesn't say to eat them. And, you know, there are passages that say, you know, I've given you every seed-bearing plant and, you know, every tree whose fruit contains seeds, and this is food for you and for the wildlife on earth and, you know, every bird and every creature. And I really, I love that. And I like you said, I love the idea of just being together in this peace, in this connection, where it's symbiotic and not necessarily predatory.
Absolutely, yeah. That we have this friendship and connection with animals, and it's not the same kind of connection we have with humans, but it's still a very deep, meaningful kind of friendship that we can have with animals, I think, that we were intended to.
Right, and kind of also, even in the New Testament, I definitely found passages that seems to suggest that, you know, the plant-based diet is healthy. And in one of my favorite, and I actually got this from one of my favorite brands out there, which is Ezekiel. You know, Ezekiel makes all these wonderfully healthy sprouted green things. And I finally started reading some of this, you know, the passages and what was on their labels, and was like, oh, okay.
Yeah. Or even in Daniel, in the Old Testament, one of the prophets, he was exiled to Babylon with some of the other Israelites, and they were eating from the king's table, and he was in the king's court in Babylon, and he said, I don't want to eat this. Can we just eat some vegetables? And at first the guy in charge was like, I might get in trouble for that if you get sick and can't perform as well. He's like, well, let us try it out for 10 days. And he and his friends ate nothing but vegetables and water for like 10 days, and they were visibly healthier than the others. And so they were allowed to continue to eat that way. And, you know, eating from the king's table, we know, is kind of like the Western diet.
That's a really great point. I hadn't considered that.
Yeah. And so he was seen as being healthier, he and his friends, who ate vegetables and plants. It's like, oh, see, there's another picture. And so sometimes there are Christian groups who will go on what they call Daniel diets, and they're basically plant-based diets, but they will do it for short periods of time.
Right, absolutely. And in my upbringing, I was raised Catholic. We often had periods in which we were not supposed to eat meat, which was something that was always really familiar to me. And then one of my assistants, she was raised in the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, which is the Mormon Church, and she actually brought to me the Word of Wisdom, which very specifically talks about being plant-based. And then, of course, as we've talked about with the Seventh-day Adventists, who mm-hmm. often have, you know, a vegetarian opinion, Buddhists, you know, mm-hmm. have a no-kill, and even also in Hindu. I mean, I could probably list so many references all day, so I do think that it's definitely something that's very interesting how deeply rooted into all parts of our life, you know, our diet can be. But I think you're right. I think if you look for the spiritual connection, whatever your faith is, that you'll find it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it crosses all kinds of religions in terms of living peacefully with animals. So that doesn't surprise me.
Right. It is always just coming back to that peace.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so.
So earlier when you were giving us your background, you mentioned that your husband came on board later and that you had a pregnancy and you've had some kids. And that's one of the topics that comes up on Meal Mentor all the time. A lot of, you know, our members are moms, and having, you know, kids is, of course, you know, being a mom is a hard job, especially when you're trying to transition your kids, because sometimes they're not necessarily making the choice the way an adult does. It's sort of like happening in their lives. How did you sort of approach this, or what is your approach with your parenting and your kids?
Yeah, it's challenging, but I'm happy to say that they've been raised at least vegetarian from birth. So I feel like we're off to at least a somewhat good start in that sense. And we, Chad and I, my husband and I, have said that because this was a choice for us and we made this a choice, we will raise them and feed them here at home a plant-based diet and a way of eating, and try to teach them why and the benefits and why we do that. But as they get older, and we're going to be trying to figure out when that is exactly, that if they go out and they do want to eat something else or eat meat or whatever, that they will have that ability. Part of it is trying to figure out what that age is that we do that, because right now they're 6 and 3.
Mm-hmm.
But But yeah, so they don't eat any meat there, and I've really cut back there. They don't keep eggs in the house anymore, and occasionally a box of like organic Annie's mac and cheese is in the house, but that's pretty much it, unless they go to like the grandparents, and so that's where it gets a little challenging. So like my mom, whom I love and adore, it's been a little bit of a challenge for her to adjust to this. Like she still feeds them a lot of the processed fake chicken nuggets and mac and cheese and stuff like that. So, but those are hopefully right now less often than on a regular basis. So those are kind of treats, but we're doing some of the meal plans with them as well as I think someone on the meal plan had, or on the forum or Facebook had said, like, breaking up the ingredients for the meals and not mixing them and giving that to the kids. And I've done some of that sometimes, and that has helped.
Oh, that's interesting.
Eat more of the plant. So it's not mixing everything, but it's like, here's a little bit of this and this in piles on your plate, and you can eat one of each, because sometimes kids don't like things mixed. So
yeah,
that,
you know, as you were saying that, I remember when I was a kid, I hated if my food touched other food.
Yeah, and I don't resonate so much with that because it doesn't bother me too much, but I can understand that their palates still, you know, haven't adapted or, you know, grown up yet. They're still really young palates, and so so not touching things. Or the other day, I was trying to make faces with the food, like trying to make it into like a funny face on their plate, or just allowing them to play with it, or just getting them in the kitchen to help out, which kind of stresses me out. But my husband is very laid back, so it helps to have him help out with the kids helping so that they can participate in it. And the more that they're participating and seeing us eating it, the more that it's that they're willing to eat it. And I think too, the kids will sometimes say, "Ew, I don't like this," or, you know, we have them try it. It's like, okay, if you don't like it, that's fine, but you can at least try it. And then I won't bring it back up and for like a month or two, and then we'll have something like it again. And so I don't just push it out the door saying, okay, they didn't like it, we're never going to have it again. It's, I think you have to try things over and over and over and over again. Because like my daughter, my husband loves chips and salsa. That's maybe not the health, he's not the health fanatic, but he's also like 5'8" and 130 pounds. But so he likes chips and salsa, and he likes spicy salsa. And my daughter's like, "Oh, I don't like spicy. I don't like spicy." Well, she keeps trying the salsa, and now she likes it. And so I think
that's incredible.
Yeah. So now she's like, "Mom, I like salsa now, and I'm eating spicier things." And I'm like, "Cool, that's awesome."
So cute.
So I think as they see us eating things and enjoying them, and we continue to allow them to try it and have it available, I think they'll grow and adapt. And they eat salads really well, which is great. And, you know, they like broccoli and edamame and things like that. So having snacky things too, like carrots and apple slices available for them. I think being able to grab things and snack is helpful too.
And I love that you also said, another previous podcast, she said, eat by example, that if you're, you know, showing them how you want to eat, that they'll kind of come around. And I love that you and your family is a testament to that as well. And that's been your experience.
Yeah, we try to do that with them. And I think they're slowly coming around.
Yeah. So one other thing I definitely wanted to talk to you about is that you work in a Chinese church where most of the people there are not overweight. They're smaller, they're trim, but despite being thin, they still have an array of health issues, which is a reminder, you know, that healthy comes in all shapes and sizes, and so does unhealthy. That being thin doesn't necessarily mean that you're healthy. And I thought maybe you could talk to us a little bit about that and your observations.
Yeah, it's been interesting working in a Chinese church. The people there are wonderful, and I love them. And but yeah, for the majority of them, their weight isn't an issue. There are a handful of people there who are overweight, but most of them are trim and thin and small and petite. But the other day, I was talking with one of the older gentlemen, and he saw me with my lunch. He's like, "Oh, what do you have for lunch today?" And I was showing him, I think it was a potato with stuff on it. He's like, "Oh, potatoes, I can't eat those. I have diabetes." And I said, no. They're so good for you. And what you need potatoes, and you can eat potatoes and rice. And It's like, no, my doctor says I have to stay away from those carbohydrates. And I said, but I've done all this reading, and if you eat, if you cut out all the animal products and oil, then you can eat as many potatoes and rice and all that as you want. And it's like, no. And I was like, okay, you just let it go. But then I saw him a few weeks later at Trader Joe's doing my shopping, and he was in front of me, and I was like, oh, hi. And he was there, and I looked down, and he was only buying like 4 or 5 things, but it was like all meat products and yogurt.
Right, because it's low carb. Oh, my gosh.
Oh, so sad.
But, I know, and it makes me crazy that doctors are still suggesting low carb, even though there's like a plethora of studies at this point that show that that's like the last thing a diabetic needs. And if you want to learn more, an amazing book is by Dr. Neil Bernard, Prevent and Reverse Diabetes. But it's not carbs that are the problem. It's the dietary fat from the animal products. Yeah, and so we're making them worse, not better, which is why everyone who's on a low-carb diet never seems to get off it or get rid of their diabetes. It's not working, but the doctors don't seem to get that.
I know, and he seemed to think it was genetic, and I was like, and I don't know if he just thought, what do I know, just the children
right.
walking by, but I was like, no, like it's really, and there's a number of people at there who were suffering from like diabetes and a number of health issues. And I'm like, they're thin and trim.
Thin, but yeah, right. And that's what I tell people all the time is that there are thin people with diabetes, there are thin people with cancer, there are thin people who have heart attacks every single year. It's not an indicator that everything's all right because you're trim.
Yeah, exactly. And he even said, he's like, oh, I think it's genetic. And I'm like, I don't think so. I've looked back at the history of China.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it's definitely interesting how often people think something's genetic, but what it is it's not the genes that are passed down, it's the food and the habits and those traditions a lot of times.
Yeah. And I'm in my mid-30s, and a number of the people that they're church are my age and young families, they are always going out to eat, and they're eating tons of restaurant food and animal food. And I just kind of cringe going, oh, this is going to catch up one day, even though they're thin people. And I mean, just there's no weight issue whatsoever. And so it's kind of funny that here I am, the vegan, trying to lose weight, and here are all these meat eaters that are thin. So I feel like it's a little backwards sometimes. But yeah, it's just not an issue that's not always a predictor of health, the weight. But I just worry for them that I worry for their health in the future.
Right. And I'm starting to notice that too. I'm only 33, and I've been watching probably in the last 5 years, my friends, it is catching up to them, even though we're only in our early 30s, but I'm really starting to see now in terms of either they're all starting to gain weight. It's starting to that youthful metabolism isn't there. They're starting to gain weight, or they're starting to have issues. I have friends, like I said, I'm only 33 years old, and I have friends who are already on like statins and high blood pressure and all these medications. And I'm like, my goodness, you're 33, you have a new baby. Like, it's too soon to have health problems. Please change your diet, please.
I know, it's crazy at such young ages that this stuff can pop up, but or later, but it's like, oh, you could prevent that from happening in the future. But I think sometimes people aren't thinking about what is my quality of life going to be like in my 70s.
Nope, they're not. Yeah, you're absolutely right.
So I know I wasn't a few years ago. I wasn't thinking about, oh, this is...
Oh, me too.
what it will be like in my 70s. But I love your, the herbivore of the week. In fact, I just read the one from today.
Oh, yeah.
And, the woman who was in hospice, and you just think, I'm not eating this way so I'll live longer, but I'm eating this way so that my quality of life and how I live in those years that I have will be as energetic and as healthful as possible.
And that's what it is for me too. It's not that I necessarily want to live to be 150, but that I don't want the last years of my life to be miserable and awful and terrible. I don't want to have a bad quality of life. And a lot of times I see people even my own age now that I'm like, they just don't have the same quality of life that I do. And it isn't necessarily about like even how they look. It's just, you can tell that they're tired or they're run down or they don't feel well, or they're not 100%. And I'm like, I want to live every minute here. It's such a gift. I want to enjoy it to its fullness and really appreciate this life that I have been given.
Yeah, exactly.
And so I guess maybe that could be also where, you know, your faith comes back in and you're trying to, you know, honor. But it's interesting. And but I have to hope that if we all just keep leading by example, people will see us shine and then want to get in on it. So
absolutely. And I think it can be a slow process, kind of like losing weight. But I think sharing this way of living can be a slow process, and we don't always see people change immediately. But I think as we continue to set examples and live this way and be kind and be patient with other people the way we would want people to be with us, you know, that that it will make a difference. And maybe not as fast as we wish it would, but yeah, I think people will come around. You know, like my mom, I mean, she still kind of struggles with that my change in eating, but the fact that she is eating more vegetables and less meat and you know, even those little changes, it's like, yes, every little step, every little change counts. And try to, you know, be mindful of like, okay, let's celebrate even these little things.
One other thing I wanted to talk about today was about just like weight loss and how it can slow down. Cause I think that's something that a lot of people don't realize or don't want to talk about. And you've been really brave in the forums and the Facebook group, which I appreciate so much, talking about how, you know, you did lose weight and then you had a setback and you started eating things that you knew you shouldn't or you didn't want to, but you were, you know, eating emotions, et cetera, et cetera. And so you gained some of it back and now you're losing it again, but you have lost it again, which is what counts. And, but the thing is that sometimes once we get closer to our goal, that it starts to slow. It's not as fast when we had so much to lose. And that can be really sort of, you know, heartbreaking for some of us because we want it to be fast. But I always like to remind everyone that most of us are going to lose it the way we put it on, which is slow and gradual.
Yeah, it has been an up and down kind of journey for me. But yeah, just even a couple weeks ago, I was commenting and stressing that, yeah, I'd plateaued and I was stress eating. And then we do keep some snacks in the house for the kids that have oil, like crackers and things. And I would find myself eating those. And those have that triple thing of sugar, salt, and fat.
Sugar, salt, and oil. Yeah. Oh.
And so evil.
It's because it's a whammy. It's so addictive when they're together.
So I now realize that I'm thinking about that, and but I gave myself a break. I was like, you know, I've plateaued, I'm struggling, I'm frustrated. I was finding myself like angry at myself and having a lot of negative thoughts towards myself, like, why would I do that? And kind of beating myself up, and I know better, and how could I do that? And I need to stop. And I don't know that it's all bad. It wasn't bad that I wanted to stop doing that, but just kind of the way I was self-talking was not helpful. And I said, you know what, I'm just going to be plateaued for this week. And I said, you know what, for this week, I'm not going to beat myself up. If I eat some of the crackers that are on my kid's plate, or I eat a tortilla chip or something that I know isn't good, but I'm not going to beat myself up over it. And I'm just going to be kind to myself. And I'm just going to say, you know what, I've come this far and that's good. And I've done a good job. And I just am going to kind of sit in this space and honor this space and just be here for now and not stress about it. I'm not going to try to lose weight this week. I'm just going to be. And I found that I actually ate less of those little snacky things as I was kinder to myself. And at the end of the week, I realized, oh, like I haven't even eaten as much of that as I have turned my thoughts to be more gentle towards myself. And I thought, okay, you know, this is helping me. You know, why would I wouldn't say this to other people. I wouldn't talk to this way to other people. So I shouldn't talk that way to myself. So then after that week, I've started writing everything down in a journal that I'm eating, and I'm a paper and pencil person, so I just write it down. And then I've been trying the intermittent fasting. So I've been doing that for about 8 days now. So just eating, and I know it was said like 8 hours. I give myself a 9-hour window, and that's actually been really helpful. I didn't think it would be, but it really has.
Yeah, I love intermittent fasting. It's certainly not for everyone, but I'm really glad to hear you've had a positive experience with it. And I think if you're getting to that point where you are plateauing, or you're getting to a point of any kind of a struggle, and you're the kind of person that does better with boundaries, it can be a really good practice, even if you only do it for a couple of weeks. But I'm really glad to hear that it's working so well for you.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I think in the last week and a half, I'm down 2 pounds after having kind of gotten stuck. So
that's amazing. That's great.
Yeah. So I'm kind of celebrating and saying, you know what, I'm loving myself just as I am. And if I continue to lose weight, that's good. That's my goal and my progress. But I'm hoping from here on out that I'll continue to be kinder with myself on this journey.
Yeah, I really appreciated you opening up about that, about being kind to yourself. And there was one thing that you said that I just loved, that I would not talk to someone else that way. So why am I talking to myself this way? Why am I not being kind and loving to myself? And I think that's such a brilliant point. And I know I'm guilty of it too, is I will sit there and I will attack myself and say these horrible things to myself that I would never dare to say to any other person. Mm-hmm. But I say them to myself. And I beat myself up and I'm hard on myself. And I'm just like, this isn't, if I did this to another person, I wouldn't expect them to thrive. So why am I doing this to myself? And I love that you've had that experience too, where it's like, you know, I should encourage myself. I should be self-supporting and not self-criticizing.
Yeah. And it even is a biblical thing in that kindness is what leads us to change, and kindness, God's kindness is what leads us to kind of back to him. And we always think about like God's wrath, or like, you know, or like drill sergeants, or like do this. And that maybe that works for some people, but not for me, I guess. And so like having more of a kind attitude of being gentle and kind and encouraging, to myself, that yeah, because I think in our minds we think things to ourselves and about ourselves that we wouldn't say to other people. But learning to use positive words for ourselves to be kind, to ourselves.
So you said in your email to me, and this is so funny because this really resonated me too. And we've already talked about Cinderella earlier, but you had mentioned that when you saw the movie Cinderella, you really loved the mantra of have courage and be kind. And that stayed with me from the movie too. And that's kind of what we've been talking about, is like kindness with ourselves. But I really think that's where that change comes from, is having the courage to change and then to be kind.
Yeah, exactly. I love that it goes hand in hand. Yeah, it isn't just be kind, but it also is have courage to do the right thing. But if you have courage to do the right thing, but you're not kind, then it's not helpful. But if you're kind and kind of, wishy-washy or kind of too soft, then you're not having that courage part. So I love that they go together. It's have courage, like have courage to do the right thing, but be kind while you're doing it, and be gentle and don't force it. But so it's kind of my mantra lately. It's like I wake up and go, okay, have courage and be kind. And be kind.
And you can really say it about anything, because, you know, you were having the courage to admit that you had a plateau, and you also had the courage to say, well, this is why I've been sabotaging myself and doing this, you know, eating these foods, eating my kids' foods, or even just, you know, I've been not being kind to myself.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's, you know, there's such courage in being honest.
Yeah, I think so. And just, you know, I was thinking of it too, is like, you know, being on like on a journey, and like being out hiking on a mountain, and you're working towards getting to the top, and the top being like, you know, a certain weight perhaps. And I was just like, I was trying to have courage in the sense of just going forward and keeping my eyes to the ground and marching forward and going to this top and keep going and whatnot. But sometimes having courage is just saying, you know what, I just need to. I need to stop and realize where I am, and to recognize where I am in this journey, and to have a moment and to appreciate all this, and to have courage to say, okay, this is where I am. This is being on, like you said, being honest with myself, of what's going on. And, so I think there is some of that in terms of courage. And, so I just kind of took that moment of saying, I'm just going to sit in this place and take a look at the view on this hike, and just be in the moment and not be so driven, but just to enjoy the moment a little bit as well.
And that's a great point too, because I think a lot of us get so caught up in where we're going. We're so busy looking at that end point and the distance that still needs to get there that we don't stop to appreciate how far we've already come.
Mm-hmm.
And even if we are at a plateau, you know, that's fine, but we had to get there. We had to make some progress to get there. And I think a lot of time we stop to forget and sit there and savor the view, as you said so beautifully, and to appreciate what we've already accomplished. Like, stop focusing on everything we don't yet have or where we haven't yet gone. Because halfway up the mountain's view, yeah, it may not be as grand as the top, but it's still a view and it's still beautiful and worth taking that moment to savor that, hey, I got here.
Exactly. And to have that gratitude of I'm so grateful that I've gotten to this far, and it's taken this courage and this work, and it's good, and where I am is beautiful, and there's more to go, but I'm enjoying where I am, and I'm not going to be so critical. I'm going to enjoy every little step and the view and all of that, and not just be so harsh and judgmental, I think.
And when you get up there, you don't remember all the times you stumbled or fall or lost your balance. You're just, hey, I'm here, I got it. And I think that what happens is we're too busy going, oh, I didn't walk fast enough, or oh, I fell, you know, but that's not really what it's ultimately about.
Yeah, I mean, in races, you don't always remember the person who got through first. You remember the people who kind of struggle in, maybe towards the middle or end, who faced a lot of battles or, you know, fell or had problems, but they continued on even despite all of these setbacks or problems that they had. Not the people who just sail on through like, there was no problem.
What's up? You're right. I do find myself way more inspired by the people who it takes them longer or they struggle more, because it's like, wow, that person had dodge determination, and that's inspiring to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So to go, okay, I'm not maybe not racing at the front of the pack, but or maybe I am. You know, sometimes it's perspective, but you never know who's watching you and what you might look like to them. But because I think 40 pounds ago, I would have said like, oh, she's like at the front of the pack. But yeah, it's like, you know, looking back and appreciating, yeah, I've had some struggles and this is what I've overcome, and that's good. And if I can do that, then I can face whatever is in front of me, and I've got the tools, and I know what I need to do, or I know who to contact or what to look for to find out what needs to be my next step if something needs to change.
You've become quite the making it all ahead enthusiast, I've noticed, with the meal plans. Is you've been doing a lot of the cooking ahead, the prepping ahead, and maybe you can talk about that and how it's been working in your lifestyle, and does it make your life easier?
Absolutely. So I think that has been one of the key things for me this year for staying on track. And so last year when I started the meal plans, I wasn't doing it all at once. I wasn't batch cooking. I was just making the meals as they go. And you know, there were some nights I'd come home and be like, not doing that. It's too much. Even if it's 20 minutes, it's like, I'm just too tired. Mm-hmm. Or I think sometimes it's just a mental block. Even 20 minutes is not that much, but you know, it takes 20 minutes maybe to cook mac and cheese. You just don't even realize it. But no, this year I started doing the cooking all out on one day, and it is so helpful for me, because it's like, oh, on like Mondays, today is my day off. And rather than have to worry about making meals, I'm playing with my kids and going places and getting other stuff done. It's like, oh, I don't even have to worry about that. And so Thursday is my cook day, and I'd say like 90% of it done. There's still other things, but you know, I try to get like 90% of it done. So then it's become a fun cooking day for me. It's like, I know some people are much faster than I am, but I'm okay with that. It takes me probably a good 7 hours.
Oh my goodness.
It's probably like 6 or 7 hours, but that's with like watching kids and taking breaks to feed them or take them to school or do some other things. So it's not all at once. I do them kind of chunks of time throughout that day. And I'm kind of cleaning up as I go. So that 7 hours probably entails all the other stuff with the kids and cleaning up and putting everything away. But, and we don't have a dishwasher, so everything is by hand. So it slows me down a little bit, I think. But no, it's just kind of my fun cooking day. I enjoy it. And the kids know, they're like, oh, today's your cooking day, isn't it? So, but it frees me up for the rest of the week. And then I can just grab lunch. I can grab dinner out and reheat it, and it's ready to go. And even the pasta is like, I've become super lazy. I'm like, hey, pasta gets cooked on Thursday and the noodles sit in the fridge. And for me, it's fine. Like they still come out fine to me. But, so I've really appreciated and enjoyed doing that. And I think what I've started doing too, the last, I don't know, month or so, is I've been posting them not just to the Meal Mentor, web page, but also my own Facebook page. And so some of my friends are going, wow, that looks so good. Even my like really heavy meat eating friends are like, that looks really good. I'm like, it is.
My plan is working.
Yeah. So
it's great though. Yeah.
On the side of kindness, I think, you know, trying to win people over with going, look at how good this is. And this is the positive side versus mm-hmm. like, I'm, you know, we'll sometimes also post like, oh, look at like animals and what they've gone through. But I think posting to show people, look at how good and easy and yummy, and this is stuff you would like too. And it's not this big mental leap for people now to go, oh, what do you eat when you're vegetarian? It's like, mm-hmm. look at all this food you can eat, and it's great and it's easy. And if I can do it, you can do it. And so...
Yeah, that's all back to that leading by example, which I just love. And I'm so glad you're doing that. I always encourage people to do that, whether it's on your Facebook page or if you have Instagram or Twitter or anything. Just mm-hmm. showing people what healthy food looks like helps kind of make it not so scary or so weird. Like, I mean, I remember when I first went plant-based, my friends were like, what do you eat? And I was like, food. But now with all this social media, I can be like, look at all this stuff that I eat. And they're like, damn, you eat better than me. And I'm like, see, you can do it too.
I know. Yeah. I feel the same way. And people are like, what do you eat? I'm like, all kinds of stuff. Like, what do you mean? What do I eat? But yeah. So now here's like visuals of like, this is mm-hmm. what I eat.
And I always tell people I eat such a bigger variety of food now than I ever did before. And I have the pictures to prove it.
Yeah, and not only like variety, but like amount. Because like we mm-hmm. had a meeting yesterday after services, and I ordered food for other people, and then I brought my own, and I opened up, and it was the Asian noodle salad with the cucumbers and carrots and the vermicelli noodles. And they're like, that is a lot of food. I was like, yes, and this is just for me.
Yeah, you're like, this is mine.
Yeah, I was like, yeah, it's a lot of food, and it's great that, you know, I can eat all this and be full, and actually couldn't even finish it. It was a little bit more than I could finish at the time. But yeah, it's like, yeah, I can eat all this food. That's great. And I don't feel gross afterwards.
Yeah. One of the things I love about the meal plans is how much food you get. You know, we're all about big portions and less calories. And I really had like a real life comparison of this a few weeks ago as I was meeting my girlfriend, and we'd agreed to go hiking and then kind of have like a picnic there afterward. And so we both had brought our food, and, you know, we both eat about the same amount of calories, you know, day to day. And so she's an omnivore, and she like whipped out her lunch, and it was just like this tiny little sandwich and like maybe 10 baby carrots, you know, like a tiny little snack bag of baby carrots. Like that was her whole lunch, and it was like 400 or 500 calories, which fit with her calorie budget of the day. And then I pulled out my meal plan, and I had like this big Tupperware of soup, and this big Tupperware of salad, and then like an apple and a half of potato. And I was like, I'm eating the same amount of calories.
Yep. Yeah.
And she was like, how are you so big and you eat all this food? And I was like, well, actually, and I like pulled out the meal plan and was like, oh yeah, this is like 400 and some calories. And she's like, wait, that's less than mine.
I know. Isn't it amazing?
And I was like, yeah, that's the miracle of eating the meal plans and plant-based.
Mm-hmm. Nutrient density or whatever it's called.
Yeah, it's like low calories, lots of nutrients. I'm like, man, it's so I was really like loving it that day. And I just remember like she was long done and I was like only halfway through.
Sorry, I'm still chewing.
I was like, I'm still chewing, hang on. But I think I didn't even finish it because I was just like starting to get like she's just looking at me and I'm like, I'll just eat my apple in the car on the way home.
I'm like, okay, we can get going.
We'll just we'll continue. I'll finish my boatload of food later, but thanks.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was like such a moment for me where I was like, yeah, That's the difference.
Yeah, and I think that's great that, you know, people who are trying to lose weight, it's like there's so, you can eat so much food and such good food and not feel crummy and still lose weight and be healthy. And it's like, it's just, it's all win, 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 win.
Right.
And I think it's a mental thing for people to get to of like, oh, if I have to eat vegetarian, then I just have to eat like salad and hummus and that's it. It's like, no, there's so much more. Even though salad and hummus are really good.
Yeah, those are, I love those things, but no, there's so much more than that. I know people say that all the time, and I almost hate ever eating salads in front of other people, even though I love them, because I like don't, I want to prove that I don't just eat salad, but yeah. I love salad. So it's like, it's a, the struggle is real.
Yeah.
Well, it's been so fun having you, Jennifer, and I just wanted to see if there was anything else you wanted to add for people who are listening or maybe what you love about the member community, and then I'll let you go be a mom and have your fun night.
Yeah, thank you. No, it's been so fun. I've, you know, I love getting to hang out with everyone on Facebook, and I think for me the biggest thing has been the community. That has been the biggest help for me this year, I think, in sticking to it is having the community through the forums and through Facebook that – having that accountability and that friendship and the encouragement that we have for each other, it's just made the biggest difference. And so that's why I love being on there, is because I get so much out of it, and I want to encourage other people that, yeah. And so if you haven't gotten onto the forums or onto Facebook, I just want to encourage you to get on and check it out and post your pictures or post your questions or just say hi even, you know, we love meeting new people and just, maybe one day we'll all meet in person. I don't know.
I know. That would be so amazing. I wish we could do that.
But for now, like, even just listening to the podcast, like, I love listening to the podcast because I'm like, oh, I get to know some of these people a little bit better. But, yeah, so I love the community.
Yeah, it's so nice. And there's every kind of topic you can imagine. And there's nothing off limits. And I think that's what I love the most is, like, even if you have, like, something that you're kind of embarrassed about, there's no judgment. And someone else has experienced it and is there to, like, offer support or their advice. And it's so nice.
Yeah, definitely. It's a good group of people.
Well, if you want to learn more about the meal plans and what we're talking about, you can visit getmealplans.com. This is Lindsay from Meal Mentor. And I want to thank again, Jennifer, for being on and being such an awesome member of our community. And if you are in the Facebook group or the forums, I'm sure you'll meet her because she's amazing. Thank you so much, Jennifer.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.